Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for April 26, 2015. Koyo Kubota here. So very glad you joined us. I'd like to start off today sharing what I've been working on every morning for the last month or so, perhaps. Building an orchard. Now, this is a spot on our property where for some years now I've chosen for an orchard area, small area, and maybe four dozen trees, gets good sun. It's on a little raised area, so the drainage is good. And over the years, I've had a lot of failures, you know. I'd buy some trees and plant them, and they just won't take. Or some, even they live for 1 or 2 years, and then maybe one winter was particularly dry, and I didn't water it during the rainy season, but it needed it because it was very dried, and they didn't make it. But I've been still trying, and this couple of them did last. You know, I tried three walnut, I tried quite a few blueberries, and maybe I'm getting a little bit better somehow through experience. I can't say, oh, I learned the trick. No, but in little ways, I guess through experience, this is the way gardening is. Just like cooking. So if you just cook a lot, then you sort of know what ingredients will go and how much proportions and things like this. So maybe there's no teacher like experience. So this is my latest attempt. I've planted some new trees. I bought them last, about a year ago, I guess, and then I didn't transplant them until October so that they would miss the summer heat. And then I planted them in October, and they lasted through our mild winter. And they're doing pretty good now. I know how to prepare the hole. You know, you can't underwater or overwater. There's such a thing as watering them too much. And, of course, you can't let them go too dry either. Now, I was thinking about this in terms of some Dharma teachings. And, of course, if you say not too dry, not too wet, well, you're talking about the middle way, aren't we? But here's my insight that I want to share with you this morning. This middle way is not a static middle point between two extremes. So, I got to, you know, sort of like I got to get centered in my life. This is not a place. It's a dynamic state. It's not a static middle point. So, if only I could find that middle point. You know, the middle way. it is an optimal place or position. But between the two extremes, you know, certain optimal moisture between too dry, too wet. But when I say it's not a static thing, but a dynamic process, it's because the ground, in this metaphor that I'm using, and of course you could push metaphors around to mean what you want to mean, okay? So it's always getting drier or wetter. Now, what this means is I don't water it every day. I water it about once or twice a week, and you water it really good, you know, because the roots have to go down. If it's watered all the time, every day, say, I think then the roots stay near the surface of the ground. Okay, this is my thinking. But as it gets dried out, okay, after so many days after you watered it, then the roots have to go a little bit deeper to get the moisture down deeper. Okay. And then, of course, if you don't water it at all, the drier it's going to get from the surface deeper and deeper, and you know, you have to replenish that. And this I'm talking about for trees, not necessarily for all plants. And having good mulch on top helps to maintain the optimal moisture level. So there's this dynamic process of the soil getting drier, and then you get it wet, and it gets wetter, then it gets drier. Huh? It's a flux. It's not like it's just going to stay a particular optimal moisture level statically. And to make this example in another metaphor, it's like balancing something physically. And for some reason, I always have this example of when I was in graduate school, I had a room office mate named Joe, and he could balance anything. He could balance a coat hanger, you know, on his chin, between his lower lip and his chin, there's a little indention there, and he could put a pencil or ruler. He could even put a chair there, one of the four legs of a chair. In almost any object, he could balance it, and immediately, what I noticed when he would show me this skill he had is that to be balanced and centered, this physical object is always moving. It's not static centered. Okay, it's moving a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. That's how you keep it balanced. Now, I always remembered this. And now I could sort of relate it to a teaching about the nature of reality and apply it to one's life. Okay? We don't need to seek out the static, oh, this is perfection, this is the perfect center. Okay. And you could try to see if you could apply this to other kinds of situations in your life. And I'd like to play with that idea in my own life. Spiritual journey and see how it goes, you know. How to water your orchard. Well, I'm very pleased to introduce today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Wendy Shinyo of New York, and she was part of the LM Lay Minister 2 group, and she has served as the past president of the Trailblazers, which is the resource support group for the Bright Dawn lay ministers. And I'm very glad to say that her spouse, Renee, is in the current LM8 program class. So many couples. It's terrific, you know. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce Wendy Shinyo Sensei.
Thank you, Reverend Coyle. I'm always going to remember your office mate story. A wonderful tool for my imagination to think about balance and not trying to be static and not trying to make everything perfect. I just have this image of this guy balancing a chair on his chin. It's great. And it's interesting because I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of the fact that nothing is static either, and using nature and seasonal change as sort of the illustration. I think, you know, seasonal change, especially those of us who live in an area where seasonal change is always quite dramatic, is always a way to sort of stop and look at your life and say, you know, change isn't always bad, and sometimes change is good because it gets us out of something we'd rather not be in, or gets us to a place of just difference. So my Dharma glimpse is entitled Spring as Such. It would be stating the obvious to say that this past winter was brutal for many of us across the country, but living in upstate New York, brutal winters are not all that unusual, but this one really was for the record books. And, you know, as I put my thoughts together for this talk on Friday, I was sitting in my office and looking out my office window, and as I was watching, the change of temperature changed the precipitation type drastically in a matter of like 15, 20 minutes. First, I was seeing lake effect snowflakes fly, and then there was grapple bouncing all over the windows and the driveway. And I may have to interject here and explain what grapple is, because many people in different areas of the country, first of all, you've never probably seen grapple, and secondly, you've probably never heard of it. But grapple is a common precipitation type here in our area. And it's also very common, I guess, in higher elevations. It's a frozen precipitation. It's distinct from hail, and it's not really ice pellets, and it's not really snowflakes. It looks like little, small, white beads of polystyrene, like that packing stuff. And it's formed, I guess, when supercool droplets of water are collected and then freeze on a snowflake that's falling. And then that forms what they call a rime or a coating of white ice over the snowflake. And these are perfectly little round balls, and they bounce. It's a fascinating thing. I actually had our niece move from New York City with her husband, and they moved to Rochester. She was from Rochester, and he had never seen grapple, and he was driving to work one morning and saw this bouncing stuff, and he was calling everybody, what is this stuff? So it's very interesting. So anyway, back to my story. That was going on Friday. But back to the extreme winter we had. We broke records in Rochester. February was the coldest February in the history of keeping weather records in Rochester, New York, with the average temperature of only about 12 degrees. It was the snowiest, also one of the snowiest, it wasn't the snowiest, winter in Rochester, with official seasonal snowfall to date of 101.4 inches. And that's compared to our average normal seasonal snowfall of 98.7 inches. Now, the snowfall was shy of last year's 112, about 113 inches, but, you know, I always say, it's only April 26th, it's not over, we could have some snow in a couple of weeks. But at the same time, the daffodils have bloomed, the trees and bushes are budding, the grasses have greened, yet the snow and grapple remind us that the cold and white haven't quite left yet. You know, seasonal change can delight. The color and drama of seasonal change coming anew each year. One day, gray trees. The next, a subtle wash of pastel green. The surprise of the first thunderstorm. Spring and fall winds downing limbs and rattling windows. And then the hush of the first snow, sort of like nature's theater, really. But it's in that change from unrelenting cold and marble sameness of winter to that first pale spring color that really, that's the thing that delights us. And it's that transition from the oppressive, humid stillness of late summer to the comfortable cool and brilliant blaze of fall color that relaxes. So, is it spring? Yes, supposedly. Is it winter? Not by the calendar. But the Heart Sutra, the essential sutra of the Prajnaparamita, teaches us about the essence of life as change, cautioning us not to label anything one thing or the other, because there is no discrete thing or existence, but continuous change and continuous interrelationship. This, I think, is the essence of Buddhism. As Reverend Gyomei Kobose, Reverend Koyo's father, writes in his translation of the Heart Sutra, all things arise and subside, appear and disappear, according to the direct and indirect causes and results. Just as water at a certain temperature becomes steam, and steam under certain conditions of reduced temperatures become water, and water under the other conditions becomes ice, and then ice melts, all things in this world appear and disappear. Nothing is permanent. According to causes, conditions, and results, all things continuously change. There is no one thing, no thing as such, and there is nothing about which you can say, this is it. As Reverend Gyomei writes, we learn from the Heart Sutra that form is no different than emptiness, and emptiness is no different than form. If we attach to the form of people, things, and circumstances as they appear to us at that moment in time, then we have fixed them forever as they appear at that one moment, forgetting that things will change. In this forgetting, we will suffer. We suffer if things don't change and suffer if they do, depending on our feelings at the moment. As soon as we attach, Reverend Gyomei writes, it is already gone. While we are in it, we are, at the same time, out. This is transcending, he writes. So I'd like to close sort of in praise of the appearance of the ending of winter and the beginning of spring with a poem I wrote some years ago to accompany a painting of a local meadow of daffodils that we tend to walk in the spring. This painting was painted by my partner Renee, as Reverend Coyle referred to, for a gallery art show, and I wrote poems to accompany each painting. This poem is called Daffodil Ease. Through the crisp, soundless white of winter, swampy early spring, and the exhausted dust of late summer, the daffodils don't even exist. That spectacle of green, a hope of color, unreal. Yet there's holiness in those sleeping bulbs. They pierce the thin shell of unreality, alive while frozen, unstained by mud, and dozing in the hot sun at ease, finding no fault in what changes, which is beautiful, what becomes ugly. One arises, the other dissolves. Which to hold, what to reject. Like the daffodil, sit through it all. It's nothing but mind. This poem was inspired by my reading of Longchenpa, a 14th century Tibetan Nyingma master who wrote, since things neither exist nor don't exist, are neither real nor unreal, are utterly beyond adopting and rejecting, one might as well burst out laughing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The reality of when we say things like the phrases, I know people talk about the linguistic play on words, but we're trying to use words to go beyond words. And the Buddhistic phrases like real but not real, you know, or one, yet two, yet one. And I know that those who are struggling, trying to understand the teaching, sometimes get frustrated with these kind of paradoxical statements, but it's really true, because they're trying to show that if you get fixated to a label, wouldn't our world be simpler if we said, well, this word means this, this word means this, and, you know, so forth. Black and white, black is black, white is white. But sometimes what was black in terms of, say, something negative becomes something positive, because it reflects the dynamic nature of change. You know, the use of language, the use of labels. Now, language is a powerful tool, but when does a tool become our master? There's nothing wrong with labeling reality. It's very helpful and powerful tool that language is. Our problem comes when we mistake those labels that we put on reality for reality itself. And this is where what the Heart Sutra is trying to express. And it's a very difficult problem if we rely on literalness of word language and you know, if we talk about the weather, you know, that transition times when winter to spring and so forth, topic of conversation is such that people from different parts of the country say, well, you know, because we got a calendar, and the calendar tells us, well, it's supposed to be spring. And in the Midwest, I remember when there would be changes from day to day, you know, within maybe a 30-degree drop or even 40 or 50-degree swing in temperature during this transition time of, you know, when spring comes in like a lion. we say, hey, I thought it was supposed to be spring. The last few days was like this, okay? And then we have something to talk about, right? And there was kind of a joke in that we heard in the Midwest, like in Chicago area, where it says, well, you don't like the weather? Stick around. Okay. It's going to change. Okay. And I remember talking to somebody on the telephone, salesperson. I said, where are you located? And she said, well, I'm in the Northeast. And we're talking about the weather. And she goes, yeah, you know, seasons. She says, yeah, we have four seasons in one day. That was their joke, and I thought that was pretty good too. So transition times, you know, beyond the labels. Oh, is it good? Is it bad? Is it too wet, too dry? Is it left or right? You know, high or low? The nature of transition means process. Process means movement, means a verb. So reality is the verb, not the nouns. This is at least one very insightful thing that I've learned about language. And if you get interested in linguistic, you know, relativity of the words and how language affects experience and vice versa, and you know, we start to think, well, because of our language, how does it mold our experience? You know, or do we have some kind of experience that we don't have any words for, and then we say, oh, then we devise a word for it? Okay. This is an unanswerable issue. Which came first, the language or the experience? Okay. Benjamin Whorf, sometimes called the Whorfian hypothesis, that if you don't have a language or the words for it to describe a certain kind of experience, you will not experience it. You know? And the reason that there's so many words for snow in the Eskimo language is because snow is so important to them in their life, and so they had a lot of different words for it. Okay, not like in our language we might have, oh, wet snow, light snow, and oh, but we do have the drupple. You know, reflecting the local climate situations. That's an interesting discussion topic. Linguistic relativity theory, Whorfian hypothesis, and we may learn something. We don't have to answer it, which came first, you know. But it suggests that, you know, if your language does not have a lot of different words for love, maybe the kinds of emotions and feelings and experiences you have are confined, limited, you know. If by love, we have different words that tell us things, not like different adjectives of brotherly love, motherly love, you know, and so forth, but different words. If love is important in our culture, we should have different words for the subtlety of experiences. Huh? So we might look at a language and see, hey, take a look at all the nouns that there are that reflect certain values, okay? And if the language is dominated by negative emotional words as compared to positive ones, will that sort of make that culture, you know, colored that way? Well, interesting topic, as I say. But the main point here is verbs, not nouns. I think this is we don't have to call it Buddhistic. It's reality. Huh? Or if you want to put it into a religious sphere, how about the sentence, God is a verb? Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very beautiful, wonderful, dynamic, changing day. Thank you.